Well, thank you for being with me today. My name is Eutrice Lead, and you're listening to Lead Stories on the Progressive Radio Network on this day, September the 11th, 2012. Well, in a way, we'll be picking up from where Gary just left off. We'll be talking in the second half of the program with more revelations that I think are startling. You would want to stay tuned for that. It would be an extremely informative section in which we'll be talking about undisclosed and still unanswered questions about the 9/11 attacks in the United States. But what were your recollections of that day? Where were you on that day? What do you remember happening to you on that day? I know for me, it was, of course, a jarring moment. And, of course, I was at a radio station at 120 Wall Street, just literally blocks away from the devastation. And it is not an underestimation to say that people were just traumatized by the events of that day. But let's talk about you and what you remember of that day. What thoughts crossed your mind? What do you remember asking yourself? What do you remember the impression being on that day, a kind of Armageddon right close to you, whether you were physically there or whether you watched the events on television as the whole nation and the whole world did? The number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Certainly, in the years that have ensued, and there's been a lot of re-examination, and we just heard some of it previous to this this program. But the questions linger. And the intent also on clamping down on these questions lingers. We are getting a lot of resistance from the government, from officials. There are lots of elements to the story that people don't want to know, people in government don't want to know, and for specific reasons. But the good news is that people continue to ask, people continue to probe, people continue to demand answers. This was, in fact, a major event. There had to have been a huge architecture behind it. And it simply could not have been, well, one group decided that this is what they're going to do. There had to be something else. And there has to be a reason why all these years later, we're not hearing what those things are. We're not hearing a rational discussion, but we have entered a war. We have taken retaliatory action. And still the questions linger. And still the effort to resist giving answers. On that day, I remember I was running a little late. I lived in Brooklyn, and I had to get to the station quickly. And I decided I'd take a cab, because it wasn't a far ride. It wasn't a long ride. And we started off, and soon enough came to a grinding halt. The taxi the driver decided he would take the BQE, the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway, and then connect with the Brooklyn Bridge. And it was on the BQE that traffic just came to a full stop. And I couldn't figure out what it was. What's going on? I thought it was a horrible accident ahead. But really, the accident was to my left. And when I said to my left, we were on the BQE, and the left was actually New York Harbor. And all eyes were on New York Harbor. Now, what was interesting was, and it came to me in a flash, when I got a sense of where I was and the environment that I was in, I quickly realized something really peculiar. And that was that the vast majority of the vehicles and the people gawking to the left, overlooking the harbor to the other side, the New York side, and watching this huge plume of dark smoke, most of them were Middle Easterners. There were literally the majority of people at that time in the vehicles that were stalled on the BQE, and I thought it really peculiar. And where where the car was stopped on the BQE as we approached the entrance to the Brooklyn Bridge to get across to Manhattan, that area on Atlantic Avenue is a heavily Middle Eastern area, people from the Arab world. And it dawned on me that there was a connection. The driver did not have the radio on at that time. We were just mesmerized by this huge plume of smoke that everybody was looking. We had no idea yet. So he turned on the radio, and there it was. Disaster. And it then dawned on me that what I was witnessing on the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway, stuck in the middle of all of this traffic, with most of these people clearly in their Muslim garb and Middle Eastern garb, they were literally trying to get away. They were trying to get out of the area, probably in anticipation of really horrible reactions. And then, of course, came this huge realization that it is not just a terrorist attack, which is what people had said. Planes had flown into the World Trade Center buildings, and of course it collapsed. And then in the middle of it all, just absolute chaos, chaos, chaos. I try my best not to recall the events of that day because they were just so jarring to me. And the aftermath also was jarring. We could not enter the building, and in front of the building at 120 Wall Street actually was converted to a staging area for the military and for others who were involved in the effort to render help. But the smell, the scorching smell of electrical material incinerated and flying around, there was a huge, a thick coating of dust, very thick, inches thick, all over the place. You couldn't go down there. In fact, it was under martial law. We could not. We literally had to set up the station in a remote area, get the elements of a radio station together and set it up so it could function. And it was in fact, one of the few stations that actually was broadcasting at the time. Our transmitter remained at the Empire State Building while many transmitters were operating out of the World Trade Center, at the top of the World Trade Center. So when the attack occurred, they were just decimated. Their ability to broadcast was gone. But what do you remember? 1-888-874-4888. The the years that have gone by have not numbed me, of course. You can't really get over something like that. It remains with you, even if you push it in a remote corner of your mind. But what remains more than anything else is this unsettling feeling that we just don't know everything. And there's so much to be known. And as has been the history of major events like this, and our history with our government not telling the truth, or certainly not telling the whole truth, we simply just don't understand what is behind it all. Is it simply a matter of a group of people deciding that they would just inflict terror? And this happens. It happens. You do have this kind of mindless violence that occurs all over the world. But is there a larger picture here? And why don't we know it? What would we discover if we really knew the full and larger picture? You know, the ancient philosophers used to talk about, Socrates would talk about the noble lie. And he said that in some cases, in the interest of the good of the people, it was understandable and even allowable that a government would engage in noble lying. Have we been subjected to ignoble lying? That's the question. We have Pace from New York City. Hello, you're on the air.
Eutrice Lee, I remember you from New York, the slave theater, Brooklyn, New York. Brother Ultimatix.
Thank you. Where were you on 9/11?
Yes, 9/11. I was working the polls that year when the news had struck, and I thought it was a movie. Later on, I realized that this was real. Then I was also in school, and I was taking a critical study class. And the teacher gave out some questions. And one of the questions that was posed was, what would be the effects, or how would this affect your community? And my answer was that there were laws, there were things that were being done back then, that now that we have 9/11 in full effect with national security, now things that they were doing back then in terms of how the police were conducting themselves in the black community now will be legit and approved. And sure enough, that's what's going on. And that's how I see the effects of 9/11 with the search and seizure and all that other stuff.
But in the actual moment, what were you thinking?
Pardon me?
In the actual moment when this thing was unfolding, what were you thinking?
At the time, when it brought to my attention we had TVs, I thought it was a movie being made, that this was a movie.
Yeah.
And later on, I realized that this was not a movie or upcoming movie that was coming, but that this was actually taking place. This was real. It was live, and not a movie or a preview of a movie. That's what I initially thought.
Well, thank you for joining us today. And please pass the word on. I need everybody to come on in to the PRN family and join us here every day at 1 o'clock.
Well, thank you. I just shared it on Facebook already, the link.
Great. Thank you so much, Pace, for calling.
All right, my sister. Thank you.
You're listening to Lead Stories on the Progressive Radio Network. It is the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks today. And on this program, we will get into some of the questions that, in fact, would let Pace know. He finally realized this was not a movie. I think we all thought there was something surreal about it. And our next guest tells us there is something quite real about what is behind the scenes of these attacks. We will be back right after this short break, and we begin that segment right after this.
Get up, stand up, stand up. see the light. You stand up for your rights.
Obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center. CNN is there right now.
Oh, there's another one. Another plane just hit. Right? Oh, my God. Another plane.
Exploding right now. You got people running up the street.
Citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack. Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans. I've directed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to find those responsible and to bring them to justice. We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbored them. Thank you. Good night, and God bless America.
And that was the beginning of an official process of deception, according to our guest today. He's Rory O'Connor. He's the author. He's an author, filmmaker, and journalist whose work centers around media and politics. He's co-founder and president of the international media firm Global Vision, Inc., and he's board chairman of the Global Center, an affiliated nonprofit organization. He's executive producer of 911 Press for Truth, a 2009 documentary that challenged official accounts of the 911 terrorist attacks. And we just opened with an excerpt from that documentary. Thank you. Thank you very much, Rory, for being with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
There, today in the New York Times, an op-ed piece was published, written by Kurt Eichenwald of Vanity Fair, saying something you had said all the way back in 2006. And that is that there is indication that the government knew prior to these attacks, they had warning of these attacks, and they certainly should have known that they were coming. Now tell us why.
Well, first of all, let me just say, I think it's absolutely shocking that it's only on the eve of the 11th anniversary of the attacks, and as you mentioned, a half decade before our film, that the New York Times finally got around to posting this startling account by Kurt Eichenwald. And I think just as a general comment, when we start, the lack of an adequate investigation, whether it was the President's Commission, whether it was the New York Times or other journalists, whatever, there really has not been an adequate investigation of those events. And as a result of that not being an adequate investigation, of course, that gives rise to all sorts of theories and conspiracies
conspiracies and so on. So one of the things that we did that I guess I'm most proud of in 9/11 Press for Truth is that we gave voice to the families of the victims, including, you know, the so-called Jersey girls, those wonderful women, not girls, you know, who were widowed and who actually forced the Bush administration against its will to even commence the 9/11 investigation, as inadequate as it may have been. So now that I've finished my 11th anniversary Jeremiad, I suppose, you know, let me get back to your question, which is that as we demonstrated in the film, and as the director, Ray Novoselsky, and I wrote in Salon back in October, we now find that a growing number of former government insiders, all these like highly placed and very responsible officials who served in a number of federal posts, have gone on record with us as doubting what ex-CIA Director George Tenet says about the events leading up to September 11th, 2001. Now, you mentioned, you know, this article is about what the government was told. I think it's important to you know, make a distinction. Now, the government is not monolithic. And so there were parts of the government that knew things. There were parts of the government that were trying to tell. They weren't trying to tell the whole story. And, of course, the most important part of the government, the president, was essentially on leave on one of the longest vacations in the history of the presidency when the lead up to 9/11 was happening.
In 2006, I'm reading for something you, from something that you wrote in 2006 on your blog, Media is a Plural. What if I told you that a member of Osama bin Laden's inner circle operated with impunity within the United States for years before September 11? That despite being an ardent and avowed jihadi, he managed to become a naturalized citizen, to join the U.S. Army, to get posted to the Special Warfare Center where Green Berets and Delta Force train, and to work with both the CIA and the FBI. And all the while, he was a top Qaeda operative, hosting its second-in-command, Ayman al-Zawahiri, when he traveled to the U.S. in the 1990s to raise money and training both bin Laden's personal bodyguard and radical Muslims who would go on to assassinate Jewish militant Meir Kahane and detonate a truck bomb at the World Trade Center. That's big stuff. Those are big accusations that you make.
Well, they're very well documented, among other things, a fellow named Peter Lance. The guy you're talking about is named Ali Mohammed. Peter Lance wrote a whole book about this, and frankly, none of that, what you just said, is actually in dispute. So what we find is that, yes, this entire, you know, the World Trade Center attacks of 9/11, of September 11, 2001, of course, they have their roots going back more than a decade, going back to the assassination of the Jewish extremist Meir Kahane, which you just mentioned, going back to the first attacks on the World Trade Towers in 1993. This is all part and parcel. So you cannot look at the 9/11 attacks in isolation. And I think that you will find, if you go back and you look at you know, this history, that there were ample warnings all along. For example, after the assassination of Meir Kahane, there were more than 40 boxes, treasure troves of intelligence information that were gathered up, which, among other things, in Arabic, described events that were, you know, plots that were very similar to the 9/11 attacks that later came. Those boxes sat virtually unlooked at for years. So we have a whole history of government incompetence, at best, if you will, in looking at the Al-Qaeda, the base, as it's known in Arabic, that these people had been operating in the United States. They, in the case of Ali Mohammed and others, they had very close ties to the U.S. intelligence agencies. And in fact, as we documented in our Salon piece of last October, the CIA actually knew that two of the eventual hijackers had come into the United States. They didn't tell the FBI. They didn't put them on the watch list. Instead, what they did was they watched them and they assisted them through a Saudi Arabian who was probably a Saudi Arabian intelligence operative. They found these guys' housing. They gave them money. And now our operating thesis is that the CIA was attempting to infiltrate Al-Qaeda. They were attempting to turn or to flip, in intelligence parlance, these two operatives. That may be true, and if it is true, it's a reasonable thing for the CIA to want to do. But the problem is that they were violating the United States Constitution, because, of course, the CIA is not allowed to conduct intelligence operations on U.S. soil, such as this one. They did not put these people on a terror watch list. They did not share the information with the FBI. And then, to make matters worse, they lost track of them, finally. And the next time anyone saw them, they were flying a plane into the Pentagon.
I want you to address this. Also, you wrote in 2006 that the crime that precipitated this war on terror somehow has become a cold case. The only federal prosecution directly associated with the attacks, that of Zacharias Massaoui, ended in a plea bargain with an FBI agent accusing his superiors of criminal negligence. How does that link in to this, the 9/11 attack?
Well, you know, it links in because it's clear that they don't want, our government does not want the justice system, the United States justice system, involved in any of these events, whether it would be trying the attackers such as Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the others who are someday, I guess, about to go before a military tribunal in Guantanamo. There's no reason, frankly, why those people could not simply have been put on trial here in New York City in the federal justice system, as was the original plan, other than politics. So, you know, what you have here is a very toxic mix of politics, of intelligence, and frankly of incompetence at very high levels. Now, as I said, due to the lack of an adequate investigation, there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there. That's not surprising. Our take, my take, let me put it that way, is that the conspiracy here was, no, it was not a conspiracy for the United States government or any wing of it to fly airplanes into the World Trade Towers. I don't believe that. I find it ludicrous, in fact. But there was a conspiracy, and the conspiracy was to cover up the incompetence. The conspiracy was to cover up the unconstitutionality of what the CIA and others were doing. The CIA was breaking law, was violating the Constitution, and was severely incompetent in not putting these people on the terror watch list and not sharing this information with other intelligence agencies, all of which has been documented pretty widely. The fact that they were doing all this, and then they lost track of them, and the next thing we knew, they were flying a hijacked airplane into the Pentagon. If that story had ever come out of the sheer incompetence and the law-breaking that the CIA was engaged in, or we believe the CIA to have been engaged in, of course, there would have been an uproar. So, I think the key figure here, frankly, is George Tenet, who was the head of the CIA at the time. Did he fail to share intelligence with the White House and the FBI in 2000 and 2001 that could have prevented these attacks? Did a group in the CIA's Al-Qaeda office engage in an illegal, unconstitutional, domestic covert operation involving two of the hijackers? And if so, why has that not been in the New York Times yet? much less 11 days after the fact. Why did that not come out in the commission report? You know, we interviewed Governor Thomas Kane, who was the co-chairman of the President's Commission on 9/11. And he told us some shocking things. He said, for example, that CIA Director George Tenet had, quote, obviously not been forthcoming in his testimony in front of the commission. And I said, I asked Governor Kane, I was shocked to hear him, you know, when he said not forthcoming, that's like a polite way of saying he didn't tell the truth. So I said, well, did Tenet misspeak? And Kane responded, no, I don't think he misspoke. I think he misled. And this is not just Governor Kane who's saying this. There's a number of people in the FBI we talked to who backed up these allegations. And perhaps most importantly, the former White House counterterrorism chief, Richard Clark, who also gave us an on-camera interview, told us that Tenet, who at once had been one of his closest friends, had actually ordered the withholding of the information about the two Al-Qaeda operatives from both the FBI and from the White House. So here you have a Republican governor who is the head of the 9/11 commission. Here you have the George Bush's own counterterrorism chief, and they're each telling us that the CIA knew more than they A, told the president, B, told the FBI, or C, told the 9/11 commission when it was investigating.
But in some cases, so much has been done to make this water under the bridge. A nice little parcel has been nicely tied up with a nice ribbon and a nice bow, and the issue has been investigated and put to bed.
Are you suggesting that it should be unearthed? I am shocked about that. I have found as a filmmaker and as a journalist, I've gotten exactly that same response from a lot of the programmers and a lot of the journalistic community. You know, we did 9/11 Press for Truth, as I say, 5 years ago. We spent 4 years trying to make a follow-up documentary that would have a lot of this information I'm referring to, the interview with Governor Kane, the interview with the White House counterterrorist chief Clark, interviews with top FBI people, all charging that the CIA officials may have begun, as I say, a cover-up of what Richard Clark told us was their earlier malfeasance and misfeasance. And despite the fact that we did the first film, despite the fact that we had these people on videotape, we couldn't get any support or anybody to agree to air a second film. They said to me, why are you still, you know, coming to us about 9/11? That's so old. Why don't you move on? Now, personally, I think, you know, the largest terror attack in the history of the country, and we still don't know what happened or why. I don't think it's time to move on.
What do you think should happen?
Well, I think that the main thing that should happen is that we need to have a new investigation. This is something, as I say, that the families in 9/11 Press for Truth have been pushing for since the very beginning. It's the way that we end the 9/11 Press for Truth. And they have a very specific list of questions, you know, which are easily available via our friend Mr. Google for anyone who wanted to find them. But not only is it in the journalistic community, not only is it among the Bush administration, the Obama administration apparently is taking exactly the same tack. You know, President Obama just gave a videotaped little address a couple of days ago on this subject, and he said, all our questions about 9/11 have been answered. I don't think so, Mr. President.
So in your view, Rory, is it more important to focus on the internal failings, or is it more important to focus, as both Presidents Bush and Barack Obama have done, about the rise of Al-Qaeda-sponsored terrorism?
Well, they're both important, and you know that's a false choice if you ask me. I mean, look, obviously Al Qaeda terrorism is something that the United States government needs to stay on top of. We could quarrel about the tactics, such as the assassination of United States citizens without any trial or due process that the Obama administration's been engaged in, for example. So, tactically we could quarrel with them, but I think that you're finding that whether it's Obama or Bush, whether it's the George Tenet at the CIA or the current leader of the CIA, no one in position of power in Washington, D.C. has any interest in really getting to the truth of what happened. And that is because it doesn't benefit either one of them to go back and look at it again. But I think it would be of great benefit to the American people.
I want you to, because you're a journalist, a very fine journalist, an award-winning journalist, I want to ask you about the role of media here. You yes. commented earlier that, of course, I did cite that what the New York Times says today is a grand revelation. You said a long time ago, 6 years ago.
Yes.
What is accounting for the will or the interest of mainstream media to keep this aspect of the story alive, that we really don't know what happened in 9/11?
Well, I mean, I think that's the reason right there. I think in the end, as more documents come out, recently there was a whole treasure trove of CIA documents that were declassified as a result of a Freedom of Information suit by the National Security Archive, for example, and many of them were the documents that Kurt Eichenwald is referring to. I don't know him, so I don't know if that's all that he had. So you're having new information that's coming out, and our information was brand new. I mean, if you have the White House's own counterterrorism chief telling you, as he told me on camera, that the CIA's failure to inform the FBI about the two hijackers in America meant that a last chance to stop the hijackers was missed. Clark said to us, even as late as September 4th, okay, so that's 1 week before the attacks. Even as late as September 4th, had George Tenet shared this information, we would have, and I'm quoting now, we would have conducted a massive sweep. We would have conducted it publicly. We would have found those assholes, Clark said. There's no doubt in my mind, even with only a week left, we would have found them. So here you have the White House own counterterrorism chief saying that the attacks could have been stopped even if only a week before them this information had been shared. So this is all new information that comes up. You have journalists such as myself and Ray Novoselsky, such as Kurt Eichenwald, many, many other people who realize that there's a very large untold story here. And, we continue within the available resources, which are not sufficient, but we continue to poke and to prod, and new information comes out all the time, and that information tells a story that we don't know yet what really happened.
You mentioned that the families of the victims of 9/11 attacks continue to have questions. What are some of the questions that they have?
Well, as I said, I would refer people to the film, so some of them are in there, but also they took a lot of time at this, and this is available online. I would recommend that people actually go and find the questions. But, there's some basic ones. For example, why did the CIA, and I don't want to get too much into the detail because it gets very weedy, but the CIA monitored a high-level Al-Qaeda meeting that took place in Malaysia prior to the 9/11 attacks and prior to the attack on the USS Cole that happened earlier. In fact, that's where both of those attacks were planned. Now, the CIA and many other intelligence agencies were monitoring this very closely. This has all been documented. We know that. And two of the hijackers left Malaysia and made their way to America, to California. The CIA was watching them every step of the way. Why did the CIA not share this information? There's a question. Why did the CIA not put the names of these two on the terror watch list so that if they tried to get on an airplane, they would have been apprehended? Why did the CIA allow them to live in Southern California and through, as they say, a Saudi Arabian cutout, provide them with assistance? Now, we have speculation as to why that is, but we don't really know. So, I mean, that's just a few of the many, many unanswered questions. So I think that what we really need is a new investigation, a new impartial investigation, one that will look at the new documents that will have come out, that will look at the testimony of people like Richard Clark and of Governor Kane, the former head of the previous commission. When you have the head of the previous investigation saying on the record that he thinks that the head of the CIA misled the commission, don't you think it's time for a new commission?
What would it take to get one?
You know.
I didn't mean to cause you such.
I wish I had an answer to. Honestly, I don't. I think it. I don't know. A revolution, maybe. I mean, Mitt Romney's not going to call for one, and Barack Obama's not going to call for one. So I guess what it would take is at least another 4 years at the minimum and a new president who, you know, might be willing to look into these matters. But I'm certainly not at all hopeful that that will happen.
I have to ask you, okay, you've identified essentially a schism between two of the major components of our national security system, the FBI and the CIA.
Yes.
Why is this more than just a turf war between the two secretive agencies?
Well, I think there's almost 3,000 reasons for that. You know, and on 9/11 today, it's important to remember that these were real people and real lives were lost. And what, after all, is the first and foremost responsibility of a government? It's the security of the nation and the protection of its citizens. And our government failed to do that. And I think it's important to find out why. And you know what? I'm not really interested in blaming anybody anymore. I'm interested in trying to find out so that this doesn't happen again. And if you talk to Richard Clark as I did, if you talk to Governor Kane as I did, the scariest thing that you'll come away with is that both of them say that this could happen again tomorrow. So that's why I continue. You know, like many people, I live in New York City. Like many people, I knew people who were killed in 9/11. So it's a little personal. Excuse me. And I think that's the role of a journalist, at least to keep hammering and keep asking the questions. We don't have all the answers, but we have a lot of the questions. And they are questions that are answerable, but they remain unanswered because of a lack of will on the part of our government.
What are you doing now?
Well, ironically, we're trying to get a follow-up film. It's not the film that we wanted to make. As I said, Ray and I spent 3 or 4 years trying to get the follow-up to 9/11 made. But this one centers on a CIA, I can't go into too much detail, but it centers on someone in the CIA who worked very closely with George Tenet and was involved in not only the unfortunate events that led to 9/11, but many of the intelligence disasters, if you will, and snafus that have taken place since then. So I
have to ask you, I know you're not liking to talk too much about your personal self, but as a journalist, and you've taken a line of journalism that is not popular, let's face it. It's not going to get you invited to the right parties to hobnob with the hobnobbables. But why do you continue this?
Well, I mean, that's like saying, why are you a journalist? You know, I mean, I continued because that's who I am and what I do. And that's our role in society, if you will, our role in society. Unfortunately, this is one of the problems with our society is that the journalists are, many of them, are too concerned with hobnobbing with the high and mighty and getting invited to the right parties, or at least, maybe that's a little harsh, but what they are concerned with is maintaining their access. You know, if you, and I've worked on the inside at major media corporations as well as on the outside with my own company, Global Vision. I've kind of seen it from a lot of different perspectives. And what I will tell you is that you do not get advanced in big media by being a pain in the butt to the powers that be. Okay, you get advanced because you have access to them. And how do you get access to them? Not by making them uncomfortable, not by asking questions that they don't want to answer. So that's just, people talk about the media bias. My experience as a professional media maker has been that the real bias in the media is, frankly, is a commercial bias. It's the desire of the corporation to get more eyeballs or more circulation, and it's the desire of the employees, the people who work for big media, to advance their personal career. I mean, sort of stating the obvious. But what I'm telling you is that your career in big media does not advance if you make too many people and the wrong people uncomfortable.
Rory O'Connor, thank you so much. I know you're actually taking time to talk to us today. You're actually shooting today.
Yes, but as I said, on 9/11 anniversary days, and frankly any other day, I will always try to make the time. I think this is important. I think that, the controversy over 9/11 and the so-called truther movement and the various conspiracy theories, frankly, have gotten in the way of our not only getting the answers, but even asking the right questions. So, crazy me, I'm still hopeful that at least the journalists can keep pushing. I was thankful to see that the New York Times actually ran this article today, even if it's, 11 years too late. And we all have to keep pushing because, as I said, it's important not to assess blame, not to go back and put people in prison. It's important so that we can prevent future attacks such as this.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Rory. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Rory O'Connor is the producer. The film that we opened up with is 9/11. 911 Press for Truth. It is available. You can go on Google and take a look at it. It is a very instructive and awe-inspiring documentary, and it addresses many of the issues that linger in our minds, in the nation's minds, even today. So it's a good idea to take a look at it. Again, 911 Press for Truth. And I want to thank him so much for contributing to our discussions today. I want to thank you for joining me on Lead Stories here on the Progressive Radio Network, and continue to say what a great idea it is to bring our thoughts into the reservoir, and so we can dip in and find new ways of understanding our reality. We all contribute. So I want to thank Pace from New York also for doing that today. You can reach me at Lead Stories, L-E-I-D Stories, at gmail.com, and always pass the word on so that we can build this family. My aim is to have the biggest internet radio family on the planet, right here at the Progressive Radio Network, and you can join me every day, Monday through Friday, at 1 p.m. So again, thank you so much for being with me. I really appreciate your notes and your messages and your warm welcome here to PRN. It's been wonderful being here. I hope you enjoyed this program, and I hope it caused you to do some thinking, and it will cause you to do some more learning. Go on the Google site, take a look at Press for Truth, and appreciate a whole different angle to the 911 attacks. Thanks for being with me today. Thank you.